Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show on Cairo Radio 97.3. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in hat.
We're with you every Saturday and Sunday from 4 to 6 on Saturday. And Sunday they kind of move it around a bit, but I think it's a little bit 4 to 6 or 5 to 7 or something.
That's how the Seahawks are doing.
Yeah, exactly. Or the Mariners or whoever else is playing on the radio. You can always get us by podcast. We have a large show for you today. We're going to have a lot of fun. If you're watching on our Facebook live feed during this, you're going to watch us make my holiday French toast, or just my French toast. I think it's really delicious, and I want to taste the chef in the chapeau, who is from France, on my French toast to see if it is relevant.
You know what? What excites me is on the cutting board, there are six ingredients. There's bread, milk, butter, eggs, orange.
And spices.
And nutmeg.
Yeah. Oh. And cinnamon.
Yeah, cinnamon.
So seven ingredients.
So it's very basic, and to me, that satisfies me already because I know it's not going to go crazy.
There you go. We have a Thanksgiving boot camp coming up today. You know, we've covered a lot of the areas of Thanksgiving, and today it's going to be turkey. I'm going to talk a little bit about that, talk about Thierry's new Thanksgiving box. Mike Thierry, our old pal from Pike & Western Wine Shop, is going to be on to talk what you should be drinking for Thanksgiving. I know I have my own version of that, which is simple wines, but delicious, flavorful, fruity wines, because there's so much else going on the table. Sam Spillman is here, the director of Coffee and Cafe Experience from Cafe Vita. He is here with a mini espresso machine.
Oh, exciting. Yeah. Just on time for Christmas.
What's in your fridge? You know, we should probably do this next week, because after Thanksgiving
people
it's going
to be
loaded. Loaded. What's in your fridge? We're going to talk about Chef Bridget Charter. She's going to talk making bread with Catherine Kearley, who started Community Loaves. And I love this. It's a group of people that have bought flour, bought the yeast, put in the work, and every couple of weeks they put together a large batch of bread for Hope Link
and to be handed
out to their neighbors in need. Super fun idea. Plus, I think as we all sit in quarantine sometimes, it's nice to have a purpose.
Yes.
Right? It's, you know, and it's really also good to have purpose.
I think there is nothing more grateful than receiving some warm or just freshly baked goods from somebody.
Yeah. But don't you agree, though, that instead of wallowing, it's good to have a purpose?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's why you see all these lines at Goodwill right now and places like that. Not necessarily in the store, but to donate, because people are cleaning their house, doing their garage, they're trying to have purpose in their homes while we get through this.
Yeah, so. Quickly as a side note, I've had friends who were really just watching the news, sitting on the couch, and really, really going down the drain of like worrying and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help myself but say, get up, go to Food Lifeline, go repack some food.
Oh, you can't do that.
No?
Yeah, that's the hard part. You can try. I think they are taking some volunteers now, but it's not as simple as that. The National Guard had taken over that job.
Oh, that's right, because of the virus.
But I think they are taking some volunteers. But
there's ways,
the governor's declaration.
Yeah, but my point is there's ways to help.
Yeah, call.
Call the food bank, call somebody. Somebody will take your help.
Yeah.
And be useful to the community during this time.
Or you could go out on I-5 and relieve some of the clogged drains that were. I-5, when I came home from the farm last night, was flooded, and there were guys out there with, you know, like you and I would be at our home drain with like a big iron pick trying to relieve some of the drains.
It is I-5. That time of year.
Oh my goodness, we had quite the squall come through there. And of course, we're going to wrap up with food for thought, tasty trivia. That's always a fun way to end the show. First, let's talk about something great that you tasted last week, Chef. You got anything on your docket?
The thing that I can remember the most was I had my first big pan of Brussels sprouts, which we are coming to Thanksgiving, so it's a good item to talk about. They are, you know, cut in quarters, sauteed in a pan with some. First, put some butter in the pan, make it blonde, drop in all your Brussels sprouts. Toss them around for a few minutes until they're totally nice and colored. And then I put in bacon bits that I had left over in my fridge, some leftover cooked bacon. I diced that and put that in the Brussels sprout. And then I put some Madeira.
Uh-huh.
I have a bottle of Madeira. That bottle has been in my house for 10 years, and it was not open. I was like,
and it was not open.
I don't think I drink Madeira that much. I should definitely. It was a very nice old broadband Madeira. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to use that for my Brussels sprout. So I opened it, and delicious Madeira, by the way, and then dropped that in the pan, I waited like maybe 1 minute. It flambéed a little bit, and then I put in butter in there, finish it up. I tell you, those Brussels sprouts were quite scrumptious, and they were not. I think it's one mistake that I see a lot is, or for me, is when I eat Brussels sprouts sautéed, I don't want them to be raw. I don't want them to be like so hard.
Al dente is not the best thing for Brussels sprouts. Yeah.
No, I mean,
it's like beans to me, dry beans, you know.
Exactly.
It's not the best thing for me.
So those were a little bit tender, cooked a little bit much longer because of the juice and everything. So it was really delicious. So hell to Brussels sprouts.
I did those for a cooking class the other night, and I caramelized them in a cast iron pan with some thinly sliced lemons.
Yeah.
And just got them all kind of equally caramelized, the lemons too. And then I pulled the pan and I dressed it with saba. I glazed it with saba. You did it with, what did you say,
Marsala? Madeira.
And I did mine with saba, which is that Italian condiment. It's like balsamic, although it's not aged. It's a little bit lighter.
It's grape must.
It's a little bit sweet.
Yeah, it's grape must reduction.
Yeah.
It's really delicious.
Really delicious. It's expensive, but you don't need much.
Oh, you need to,
Yeah. So my little taste of the week, we tried to get a pot roast. We happened to be at Central Market this time. We shop all the different markets, Met Markets, Central Market, Ballard Market. I mean, we shop them all. And we tried to get a pot roast. Like, you know, do you remember that you used to be able to buy like a 7-bone pot roast?
Oh, they
Yeah, they would take it and just slice across a certain, I'm not sure what part of that, you know, the chuck of some sort.
Right.
You can't buy a bone-in pot roast, seems like, anymore. Even down at Don and Joe's Meats down in the Pike Place Market, I couldn't get a bone-in pot roast. So I bought a thing of oxtails to put to cook with my pot roast. So I got the bone in the broth, bone flavor, and then I just was picking the oxtails for the meat. Oh, I forgot how good they are. They are so tasty. It made me think of Chris Constantino down there in San Francisco and his book, Awful Good, O-F-F-A-L, Awful Good. And we were going to have him for a class here. And he had to cancel last March, but I ended up with two cases of his books that are all bought and paid for. So I am going to give away, if you are listening today and you want a book, an awful good book from Chris Constantino, you need to go to the Ballard Warehouse, which is 52nd 14th Avenue Northwest, tell the person who's working the door when you go up and say, when you order your pizza or whatever, so, and by the way, I would like a copy of Chris Constantino's awful book from Tom and Terry's radio show, and we will give you a free book.
They have to spell awful correctly.
They have to spell awful correctly. O-F-F-A-L.
And by the way, that book is awesome. I mean, I have a copy of it because I know Chris for a long time, but very, very good recipe, solid.
Yeah, and, recipes. And you know, awful is very inexpensive.
Yeah.
You know, except for things like, you know, oxtails tend to be a little bit more in demand.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of the things that we don't necessarily eat, like beef liver or heart or things like that, tends to be inexpensive.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so free book for you if you come by the warehouse and say, I would like Chris Constantino's awful book, O-F-F-A-L, that I heard about on Tom and Terry's radio show, the Hot Stove Society radio, right at the Ballard Warehouse.
Okay? Cool.
And then, you know, I only have 24, so when they're gone, they're gone. Madeline's our producer today. Where are we going, Maddie?
Coming up, our final Thanksgiving boot camp. This is our last class before the big holiday. So
Yay.
We have lots of turkey questions. We're talking about the big bird.
You're listening to us on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society radio show. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society show on Cairo Radio. Chef in the Chapeau, you have joined me once again. We are 6 feet apart for those of you who are watching us live. Put
those
your hand up.
Those are big,
show
big 6 feet. Those are big 6 feet, my friend. Looks more like eight to 10 feet.
8 to 10 feet. Thanksgiving boot camp. You know, we dealt with at Hot Stove here, we've dealt with the stuffing section, potato section, vegetable section, turkey section. We have one Hot Stove class left. When is that for?
Appetizers.
Appetizers. Is that this Friday?
I think it is this Friday, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too. If you want to join in on that class, there's tickets still available. But I've had a really good time. You know, and
it's fun to break it down by item, I think. I think it's less confusing and it's much easier to control.
Right.
And it's also very educational for most people because, like any class you do, I do, or anybody, you always learn something. You know, you always learn a couple of tricks and you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
The whole time I was worrying about that. Oh, that's what I should do.
You know what people are most curious about is my gravy tricks. We get so many comments on my gravy because, you know, I am a gravy god.
Yeah. And I'm
self-proclaimed.
I'm sauce god.
I'm a gravy god. Anyway, one of the good things that I have to reiterate is that when we did these classes, about the only class that I didn't get wound up on in my traditional stuff was my vegetable class.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's lots of easy ways to be creative with vegetables. But I also think that at Thanksgiving, when you've got all these traditional dishes and heavy dishes, like heavy sweet onion gravy, heavy turkey, heavy stuffing, heavy potatoes, vegetables are an area where you can really lighten things up. So,
I'm a big fan of salad, winter salad.
Yeah, winter salad.
Lighting it up.
Yeah. Okay, let's jump into turkey today, since we've already done those other things.
So first thing, okay. Brine or no brine?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm a no briner. I mean, I've done it both ways. I don't feel like when you get to the Thanksgiving table and you're sitting down and everything's carved and ready to go, I just don't feel like the brine step shows up in a way that is, you know, that is worth the effort.
Yeah.
I
must agree with you that in the end flavor, I don't think it shows either.
It just doesn't show enough. You can't recognize when you've put gravy on it and you do all that stuff.
But I think it does.
And the reason I say that, well, let me just finish my thought. The reason I say that is because if you take a 15-pound turkey, you need to make a 5-gallon bucket of brine.
Yeah.
And then you need to have a place to brine that overnight.
Correct.
Right? And it's a lot of effort. Brining isn't just as simple as, hey, let's just brine a turkey and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's a big thing.
The bigger the turkey, the bigger the problem.
Yeah, and then you got to put it in the fridge overnight. And so anyway, to me, it's not worth the effort. Go ahead.
I was going to say, where you see it, I think, is in the roasting part when you're cooking the bird. You see a little of a difference, but not noticeable enough to go through the trouble of doing all that brining. I've done many time brining. I was a big fan of it for many years. In the end, last couple of years, I haven't brined. And I'm like, you know what? It actually works as well. I mean, the thing is, we know how to look for things, details of roasting, details of overcooking, or, you know, things like this, heat going down as opposed to going up. We know when to calm down and not to. So all those components really help. I think when a turkey is brined because of the meat being opened up and everything, it does facilitate some of the cooking.
Uh-huh. Because, once you brine, you have to let it dry.
Correct.
You have to spend hours and hours
letting
it dry.
The brining takes 3 days.
Yeah.
It's not just one day.
Uh-huh.
It's, you got to brine for at least, if it's a 12-pound turkey, you need at least 24 to 36 hours. Mm-hmm. Then you need another 24 hours to dry.
Yeah, in a refrigerator that has room for air movement, so you
Correct.
Dry out the skin. Because essentially you're trying to get to a point where you have crispy skin.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So that's the one you
And then
gain.
You put wet gravy all over top of it. So I'm not much of a briner. Let's talk about this particular Thanksgiving a little bit, because people are looking to downsize.
Right.
So let's talk about what you can do with turkey parts.
Correct.
To get to where you want to be so that you still have turkey on your Thanksgiving table, but you don't have 10 pounds of leftover turkey.
Right. So first, I would say then if you have an 8 to 10-pound bird, there's only two of you, I would recommend boning it out. Break down the bones, make your stock with that, and then take your parts and cook them as you need them. You don't necessarily...
So you use the legs for Thanksgiving and
one
use
leg,
the breast
one breast for
another,
the day of.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And then the rest, you wrap it up and put it in the freezer. And if the breast is a giant breast, I mean, if it's a 2-pound breast and you know you're never going to have a chance to use a 2-pound breast, cut it in half and freeze it in two parts. And
then how would you deal with that breast? Now you've, let's keep the breast whole because you do want some leftovers.
Right.
So let's assume you're two people and you have a 2-pound breast. So you're going to have, once it's cooked and everything, at the end of the day, you're going to have a pound of turkey left over, right?
Oh,
so
at least,
fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. That makes great sandwiches or hot
cakes. Yeah.
So how are you going to work the breast?
Well, I would definitely use brown butter. That's my favorite way to cook, as you know.
So in a cast iron pan?
In a cast iron pan, I would put brown butter. I would put butter, let it get to the brown stage, give it a nice sear on the skin side first. You know, season your turkey, salt, pepper, whatever you want to put on there, and then put the skin side down. Give it a nice crispy side, and then turn the heat off, and then put it back on the meat side, and then put it in the oven. I would go no more than 325, and then put it in the oven for maybe 25, 30 minutes. Temp it. use your meat thermometer, make sure that you have about 155, 160. Mm-hmm. Once you reach 160, take it out of the oven, leave it on the counter, let it sit for another 15, 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. Your breast will be perfectly
It'll
cooked.
Be perfect, yeah.
And it will be still moist. It will have all the components of what you're looking for in a white meat breast of turkey.
The only thing I would do different than you is I would either put a rub on the outside before I browned it, or I would take some big sprigs of sage or rosemary, and then I would tie those with butcher twine to the breast.
Absolutely.
And then brown it with those herbs side down, because they come out crispy just like the skin comes out crispy. And now you got this nice little, pretty little breast to serve at the table, and you can carve it right at the table.
So just so we're clear, if I had a breast and a leg, because that's what I would have most likely, I would, because I like dark meat too, so I would cut the leg in two pieces.
Really?
Yeah, right
That's
here.
A lot for a home cook to do, I think.
What? Cut a leg in half?
Yes.
What?
You're talking about the leg and thigh? Or are you talking about the leg itself?
Separate the leg and the thigh.
Oh, okay. That's
just
different.
Cut in the middle at the kneecap.
Okay. No. That's fine. You have a joint there. But I thought you were saying take the drumstick and cut it in half.
Oh, no.
Okay.
And then sear at the same time as you're doing your breast, sear your leg the same way. And then put a little bit of sliced onion, sliced carrots if you want, on the bottom of your meat as you put it on the meat side, and then put that in the oven. So you have a...
Separately, though, right?
Separately. No, at the same time, but you would have to remove the breast first.
Oh, once it's done, yes.
Once it's done, and the leg will take a little bit longer, obviously, because it's a little bit denser of a meat. So, but you can cook both the leg and the breast in one pan and have a wonderful dark and white meat ready.
So my guess is the leg is going to take, for it to kind of be fall off the bone done, is going to take, your breast, you said 20, 25 minutes. Your leg is going to take an hour and 20, 25 minutes.
Well, it's going to take, if you put at 325 in the oven, it should take about 50 minutes, an hour.
Yeah.
So it's going to take double the time
at the least,
breast.
Yeah. So, okay, cool.
And then what you can do is once you pull all that meat out of there, your cast iron pan has now all these vegetables that are caramelized and done. Mm-hmm. You know, those are not really edible anymore because they've been in the oven for an hour and they're still edible. But what you can do is take your turkey stock that you've made with your bones or chicken stock and then put that in there and build your gravy from that.
Yeah. And then if you want, you don't even need to add flour in that particular scenario, because if you take a hand blender... The carrots and celery will thicken your gravy for you.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you won't even need to add a thickener to that. So, sounds so good. I'm so ready for Thanksgiving.
Me too.
I've never spent so much time getting ready for Thanksgiving. It's because of all these classes I'm teaching. It just makes me go yum. All right, our friend Mike Teer is coming up. He's the owner of Pike and Western Wine Shop in the north end of the Pike Place Market. He's got some great wine clubs that... I think are super interesting that he's been doing online, and also some suggestions for your Thanksgiving quaffs when it comes to vino. Right here on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Chef in the Chapeau is over there mixing up some French toast batter that I'm directing him. He doesn't really know how to make French toast, so I'm giving him a lesson this morning. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Ritchiero, the chef in the hat, still laughing at the fact that I don't know how to make French toast. That's good.
You know about French toast. Did you have French toast in France?
Yes, pain perdu is like a French dish, sir.
Boy, I thought it was like a morning wetness on your grass. No.
Oh, my God.
I thought you left bread outside overnight and it got a little dewy. We have our next guest, Mike Teer from Pike and Western Wine Shop, is going to join us. He's on the phone right now. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Super awesome. This is like a deja vu moment. We've talked Thanksgiving wines for so many years on this show, and you've always guided us through valiantly the proper ways to think about it, you know, whether it's time to break out the fancy wine, time to break out good old-fashioned, good drinking wine. What do you do on Thanksgiving? How do you plan your wine throughout the day and evening?
Well, as you all know, this is going to be a very different Thanksgiving from any of us, and probably my most unique one in 40 years here at the store. And we've been talking about that a lot, I think the general consensus we've come up with, I think, first of all, for Thanksgiving, I always advocate drinking what you like. Drink wines that are fruit-forward, easy drinking. They don't have to get super complicated because generally you're serving a large group of people with broad tastes. This year, that might be a little bit different, so we're thinking maybe you can open a little bit better bottles this year. That's going to be up to you, but I want to provide a range of things that I think will work. And again, the key is wines of medium weight with nice fruit, not too much oak, not too much tannin, nothing that is too strong and earthy going with Thanksgiving dinner.
Also, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but because Thanksgiving is going to be such a small gathering, I think people are going to go down in their cellar, the people who have a cellar, and look for those old vintages, because I think that they're not high in tannin or high in acids, or, you know, they're covering that spectrum that you're looking for, but on an old vintage wine.
Yeah, if you've got a great cellar, I think there are many people. But you still want to make sure the wine has enough fruitiness, I think.
Right.
I still recommend, obviously, coming to your wine and buying your wine for Thanksgiving rather than cooking your cellar. Save that for, you know, even more special occasions.
Right.
I have to say that, right?
Yeah,
yes.
Of course.
So, but I think people will want to drink something maybe a little bit nicer this year. So instead of the typical, say, $15 Riesling or Pinot Blanc or reasonably priced Pinot Noir, which all will work, you can go up just a little bit. I think sparkling wines and champagnes are a great way to go. We all need, I think, to make ourselves feel a little bit better and drink something a little bit special. So a good grower champagne or a local, like a Loire Valley, a local sparkling wine or a Loire Valley sparkling wine can work well. So it's really kind of all over the board this year. I believe me, I'm making this up as I go along.
Well, give us some
for
names.
For Thanksgiving.
Give us some names, Mike.
So names. So if I wanted to drink something, this is from a recent personal experience, and this is an old friend, and sometimes you don't see old friends for a long time, and when you do, you remember why they're your old friends. And this happened with Pamela and I recently when we brought home a bottle of 2017 Domaine Druin Pinot Noir. Mm. I've been selling Domaine Druin for many, many years. And they are one of the preeminent Oregon Pinot Noir producers. But like anybody that's been around a long time, sometimes they get overshadowed by the new kids on the block. The media is always looking for new stories. And but when we opened that bottle at dinner, it was so delicious. And at the price point it's at, about $40 a bottle, it's not inexpensive, but there are many more newer Oregon Pinot Noirs that are more expensive and not as good. So if you wanted to open a just delicious traditional bottle of wine for Thanksgiving, the Domaine Druin Pinot Noir would be high on my list.
Okay.
You don't have to spend $40. You can find less expensive Oregon Pinots, sometimes even Burgundies, but that would be, I think, something I would really treat myself to if it was just a small gathering.
All right, how about a red, how about a white?
Well, for a white, I am really fond of some of the Oregon blended whites that are coming out right now. I have one in my hand from a winery called Goodfellow Family Cellars. And get this blend. It's Riesling, Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, and Gewürztraminer.
Wow.
So it's a very unique blend, but it has beautiful fruit. It's not as sweet as a Riesling. That little bit of Pinot Noir, which is a red grape, but there's no color because they remove the skins, adds a little more body and a little more texture. And just that combination is a really beautiful, versatile combination for Thanksgiving dinner. And we recommend it for lots of summer dishes, seafood dishes. It's really versatile. And it's not something, it's sort of like in Alsace, they do these kinds of blends more typically in the Alsace region of France. And Oregon grows many of the same grapes. So a few of the wineries down there are doing that as well.
All right. Now, what Washington sparklers have you been fond of?
The best are hard to find. I mean, if you want one of the very best, I'm looking for it on my shelf here. It's from a small winery in the Columbia Gorge called Analemma. It's a Blanc de Noir. I mean, it's all Pinot Noir from Atavus Vineyard in the Columbia Gorge. But this is the equivalent of Washington's grower champagne, and it is priced accordingly. But if you wanted to really taste, I think, some of the very best out of Washington, it would be the Analemma, which is A-N-A-L-E-M-M-A, Blanc de Noir. It is expensive. It's $60 a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
For less expensive sparkling wine, if you can find it, I really like the Finnkline. They make a sparkling Gruner Veltliner. It's kind of hard to find. Sometimes you have to get it at the winery, but I love their wines, and it's about $40. It's also from the Columbia Gorge, and because the gorge is a cooler growing region, they have the ability to produce really high-quality sparkling wines. It's just not as hot as even the Yakima Valley, is certainly not as hot as Red Mountain and places like this.
If you were to pop in a classic bottle of bubbles for the holiday season, let's say you want to buy it, I think you give deals on six-packs, if I'm not mistaken, or cases. What would you tell people to get for something that's available everywhere generally, including your shop?
If I were to pick something that were more broadly available, and we do specialize in grower champagnes and have for a number of years as the small producers, but I think Tom, you and I would both agree on this. I have never stopped carrying champagnes from the family winery of Louis Roederer.
Mm-hmm.
I think you just can never go wrong, and it is widely available. But they are doing such great work these days. They keep getting better and better and better. They have converted many of their venues to biodynamic viticulture. Their Brut Premier, which you can find anywhere from probably $50 to $60, I think is one of the standards in the world of champagne. And we happily sell that all the time.
Yeah, I put in a case of Magnums every year for the holidays when the Roederer champagne. Really fun. Mike, before we run out of time, I want to make sure people know about your wine club.
Well, Pike & Western has had a wine club for about 10 years now. It actually started when I had Soul Wine below Sirius Pie in South Lake Union, neither of which is there anymore. But I brought it to Pike & Western. It's been a big success. We have a wine club where you can choose for $40 to $90 a month, 3 to 6 bottles with descriptions. We also have a champagne club where you get a bottle of champagne every month with descriptions. And it's a great way to try new wines. That was the impetus behind my forming the club, was to get people to, without spending a lot of money, to try wines they might not buy otherwise. And we've had wonderful response. People, once they join, unless they move away or something, stay on it for many, many years. Unlike a lot of clubs, we don't have a lot of turnover. And one of the big advantages to being in our club is it also automatically enrolls you in what we call the Soul Wine Society, which is a club that gets you 15% off any purchase in the store.
All right,
you
know, Maddie, Tom, we've got about a minute left here.
Yeah, one of the things that I love most about Mike's store is you can walk in there at any point of the day and tell him what you are going to make for dinner either that night or this coming week, and he has the best options for all different price ranges, and it's just such a great fun thing. Well, he'll dive into certain ingredients that you're going to cook that night. He's the best pairings. I highly recommend going in the store if you can.
He's your own personal sommelier.
I know. It's just the best. The whole team there is awesome. So
I must say that it is very important to most people to know somebody like Mike.
Absolutely.
Who can educate you towards what you need, which is, I mean, most people are in the store looking at bottles without knowing anything about the wine. So it's very cool. Keep up the good work, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, if I could just say, what we also do is we get to know your taste.
Yeah. Right.
And that's key.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving, Mike.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Have a good one.
Thank you, guys. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you.
All right. Up next, it's What's in Your Fridge on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show on Cairo 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. The chef in the chapeau is spouting nonsense here. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Hotero, the chef in the hat.
So, Madeline Dow.
Yes.
Take us through what somebody might have in their fridge.
Well, we posted on Facebook last week a challenge to have listeners list 5 ingredients that they have in their fridge, whether they had just gone to the grocery store, they have leftovers, hopefully leftover takeout from local restaurants is what we encourage. We did have a couple submissions that I have for you here, so are you ready for the first one?
Yes.
I'm curious if our listeners actually, like I do, buy, like I do takeout from Thai Siam in Ballard's right near my house.
Yeah.
And I buy an extra meal when I'm there so that I have it like a day or two later.
I
do you ever do that?
I never do that.
No,
I'm also
I never
not
do
a
that either.
Fan.
But I like, when I eat Thai food, I like a little bit of this and that. And so sure. then I just buy full portions of this and that, and then I can have it like this and that later.
Yeah. I think it depends on the category. I think Thai food's perfect for that because it's easy to reheat and delicious.
I love pan-fried rice noodles, like reheated pan-fried rice noodles.
Mm. Mm. That's what I want right now.
Okay.
All right. So Annie Robbins is our first listener who sent in. She has bacon, pomegranate juice, coastal cheese, which I looked up. It's a cheddar from the UK, mm-hmm. buttermilk, and tortillas.
Mm.
What would you make with that, chef?
I think she should make your French toast. Instead of orange juice, use pomegranate juice.
Pomegranate would work
and
fine.
And then seal the bacon on the side. Put mm-hmm. that on top of the French toast.
Mm-hmm.
Grate some cheese. Put it under the salamander
no
or the
cheese,
broiler.
Chef. No cheese. But that's okay.
She has beautiful UK cheese. You could grate that.
Okay.
Cheddar. And then you'd have a savory French toast as opposed to a sweet French toast.
Maybe it would be English toast instead
exactly.
of French toast.
Exactly. It would be an English toast.
Okay. Except then she would have to have back bacon.
Yeah.
The English, they don't eat the bacon like we do.
No, they use much fattier back.
Well, not just the fattier, but a lot of times what I see in Ireland and England is the whole pork loin with the whole fat back on it, sliced, you know, smoked and sliced
thin, and then
pan fried. I love it. It's
delicious. Yeah, it's no waste.
Yeah, but it's more like a roast pork is where they, you know, what we consider roast pork is where they start with the cure. So. Sounds good. Okay, what's next, Madeline?
Our listener Emily sent in. She has lots of lettuces, Bartlett pears, mahi-mahi, spicy mustard, and turnips.
I wonder if the turnips are like the little Tokyo turnips. Are salad size, or are they the big, fat turnips that look like me?
I think you get to choose today because she did not specify.
All right. If they're the big turnips, I would peel them and then put them on my mandolin or on my little Japanese julienne grater and then just put them up and make them ready for salad. Obviously, you have a big old salad here. If you had some tortillas, you can make fish tacos, but maybe she doesn't. Maybe she does.
But you just could borrow them
just
from
a nice, warm seafood salad. Sounds delicious to me. Take your mahi-mahi and either give it a poach and then chill it so that you're just having, you know, you don't, with the lettuces she has, a warm seafood is going to break those down very fast, whereas if she had escarole or kale or chard, it would stand up to like a warm mustardy dressing. So I think it sounds pretty good to kind of just poach the mahi-mahi, chill it off, make a nice bright salad, use your turnips for your crunchy, and then make a mustard vinaigrette.
What's the best way to season that fish if you're going to poach it?
You don't. You season the broth you poach it in, essentially.
Okay.
And then you season the fish when it comes out with salt and pepper or lemon juice. But generally, you make a little court bouillon, which is just some sort of wine and herbs. And if you, nobody's going to have fish stock at home, but you know, something of that nature. And then you let the fish, literally on mahi-mahi, you're just going to slice it into maybe half-inch thick slices.
Yep.
Drop it in the simmering court bouillon, turn off the fire, and just let it warm all the way.
Yeah, and it goes really quick.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But let it cool in the court bouillon. Just put a cup of that in with your fish in the fridge, and by cooling in the broth, it will make your fish
moist.
Super moist.
Delicious.
See, I've learned a lot from Terry over the years.
I like
that. I'm glad you learned that part.
All right. Our listener, Lori, has a deli wheat berry squash salad in her fridge with also some quince applesauce, feta, spring greens, chicken thighs, and green olives.
Now she's just showing off.
Mm, it's true.
Yeah.
But I would definitely...
Quince applesauce? I could just eat a bowl of that.
I know, but I'm going to make a dressing with that, though, because she's got the wheat berry, she's got the spring greens, so those two go together as a salad. I crumble the feta in there, but I would make a quince applesauce. I would take some of that, some mustard, maybe your shallot mustard, you know, something that's got lots of kick. Put it in there, a little bit of apple cider vinegar and some regular oil, vegetable oil. Mix the whole thing together, make some nice thick dressing. Mix that into your wheat berry squash salad. And then the thighs, you cook them, roast them in the oven, salt, pepper, keep it simple. Roast them in the oven and then pull the meat off the bone. Sprinkle that all over your salad. And the green olive go in your martini. They do not belong on that dish.
Wow.
Terry thought that was funny.
Well, I can't possibly put green olive with that dish. That would gross me out.
Really?
So
not me.
I'd put it in the martini.
All right, good.
That sounds delicious. All right, Lori Allen, I believe she's bragging a little bit because I think she's in Florida, if I remember correctly.
No, she's in San Diego.
San Diego.
She's our longest standing
listener. I'm sorry. I was getting the two Lori's confused there. Sorry. Lori Allen. Yes. She picked both pomegranates and limes from her garden. So jealous.
Yeah, well, let's just show off a little bit, why don't we?
I know.
I'll show you a picture of what my wife brought back from
whatever.
L.A.
I think
also,
that's contraband, Terry, is what it is. So she has pomegranates, lime, feta also. She has preserved lemons and salmon. She also has a variety of herbs and spices in her cupboard.
Well, you know, if you have a lot of pomegranate, not all of us are blessed with a ton of pomegranate, but if you do have a lot, it's really easy to make pomegranate molasses, your homemade version, and I like it much better than the bottled version.
Right.
Because it tastes fresher. It's not stale.
Right.
And it is not as intense as the bottled version. So you just take, let's say, a cup of pomegranate juice. If you're going to make it, I would go with 2 cups of pomegranate juice. You squeeze them right on a squeezer like you do an orange or a lemon, and reduce it down slowly with maybe a half a cup of lime juice or lemon juice, but she has lime, so you could use lime juice, and a quarter cup of sugar. And make your own pomegranate syrup, because that would be delicious over top.
Oh, the salmon.
The salmon and the, let's see, feta cheese even. So make a little Greek salad with the salmon and the pomegranate syrup over top of your Greek salad. It sounds really good to me. Always, you know, when I make Greek salad, I like a nice big chunk of feta. I think of the feta in a Greek salad generally like you would a chicken thigh. To me, I put it on in a slab, and I kind of look at it, and I eat it. I'll take my knife, and I'll break it just a little bit with some of the cucumber and some of the tomato. Whereas when you break it up in your Greek salad, it tends to get milky and kind of ruin some of the appeal of your tomatoes and your mint and your parsley and your cucumbers, because it kind of coats everything.
Right.
So if you leave it in a slab, it doesn't do that, and your Greek salad looks really bright.
I also like how you season the top of that feta slab, too. It kind of keeps the seasoning.
Greek oregano,
right on top of it there, because it kind of keeps that in there right when they eat it deliciously.
And that, in that scenario, too, you know, roasted garlic chips would be a really nice combination in there. I made it the other day. I didn't have any red wine vinegar, so I used white wine vinegar. Perfectly delicious.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a million things you can do to those kind of big chunky salads.
Right.
The other thing I would say is when you're making something like a base for this salmon, keep your salad ingredients somewhat the same size in a Greek salad. Your cucumber and tomato should be about the same size. You don't want a big long cucumber next to a half a cherry tomato, right? Just so that it looks, the visual is very pretty.
You also marinate at the same speed as opposed to not. If you have a big chunk of beets and you have small pieces of radish, one's going to be cooked before the other, but just by marinating too fast. So.
Yeah.
It's nice to keep things in size.
Good
awesome.
Fun. Awesome. Yes, we are jealous, Lori. I hope you're enjoying the sunshine down there, because we are in Rain City right now. There's a reason they call it Rain City.
But thank you for the support, because you've been a great supporter over the year. Thank you, Diane.
Absolutely. Well, people can always send in their What's in Their Fridge segment. We can send in their submissions to either hotstoveradio@tomdouglas.com, or they can post it on our Facebook page. Just search for Hot Stove Radio.
Up next, we got another whole hour for you. We've got Sam Spillman of Cafe Vita. Bridget Charters is going to be here. Kathleen Kearley here with Community Lovers Baking. So much more on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show, 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. We got another whole hour for you. In this hour, we're going to welcome Sam Spillman of Cafe Vita with his mini home espresso machine. Although I just found out he's not going to come to the studio after all, so we'll have to do this over the phone. Chef Bridget Charters, the weekly loser in Food for Thought Tasty Trivia, is going to join us later with Community Loaves.
You're
with
setting
her friend,
yourself
Catherine
up.
Kearley. Bridget is going to stay for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia, where we can pound on her one more time.
You will.
She's in the back, cutting us off right now. No, she would never do that, would you, Bridget? But first, let's give some love to lasagna. So there's two things I wanted to talk about here, Terry. You've got a Thanksgiving box coming up.
Yep.
And I've got a lasagna box, the Cuoco lasagna box.
So that sounds cool.
Let's talk about that. You go ahead.
Are you making the lasagna box like many different ways or just one way?
Just the one way. We are very well known for our Cuoco lasagna. And, of course, Cuoco isn't open. And so we've had lots and lots of requests. It's funny, the different things to kind of show up. You get a request for everything, but you get multiple requests, you know, for certain things.
Yeah.
And one of the main things, like at Tanaka-san, we got lots of requests for the coconut curry beef, right?
Mm-hmm.
At Cuoco, everyone wants the lasagna. So that, so each week we kind of develop a new box featuring one of those most requested recipes.
Right.
And so lasagna is this week. It's from Wednesday to through Sunday, which is that the 25th through?
Through the 22nd.
Are we starting early because of Thanksgiving on the Cuoco box?
Nope, it's every Wednesday through Sunday. So listeners, if they're tuning in this weekend, they can still order it for the Sunday pickup.
Okay, all right. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So is the lasagna completed and just ready
to
warm up?
It's a whole dinner box. Yeah,
oh,
there's
nice.
Tiramisu in it. I mean, we do a little bit of everything, but it's a full dinner.
And it's for two or for one?
It's for two.
Two. Mm-hmm. Cool. And how much is it?
$75. And it
nice.
Includes a Caesar salad with our homemade focaccia and sea salt, plus a little bean mozzarella side salad as well, and then some charred Brussels sprouts, I believe, is on there, too.
And some tiramisu. Wow, that's a complete dinner for $75 for two?
Yeah, it's a good deal.
Nice. Oh, Tom, nice.
How beautiful that is. I'm sorry, if you're just listening to us on the weekend, when we taped our show on Wednesday, our Facebook listeners get to watch us make something pretty much every week, and I just flipped the French toast that I'm making. You can see the butter is there's enough butter to make
a Frenchman
in the oven for me. So I got a nice brown on it. And for those of you who are just listening, I'm sorry to interrupt our dinner box series. I had to move it while it was still not burnt. Okay, so chef, so that's our Cuoco dinner box. We of course we have all the wines and everything to go with that anyone could possibly want.
So, yeah, and we're offering, for us, we're offering a Thanksgiving box at Luc starting today. You can go to luc2go.com and order your box. It's for two. It's $120. And it's got roasted butternut squash bisque. We have a salad of radicchio, pomegranate, walnut sherry dressing. It's got endive and, beautiful greens in there, winter greens. Then I'm going to do a turkey, and I'm going to bone it out for you. It will be ready, sliced, and ready to go between breast and leg meat. So I like to give both different type of meat. Making a sage and rosemary sauce. No gravy. It's a sauce. Reduced down, stocks and everything, and finish with butter. I have a whipped potato, roasted Brussels sprout, and finish with a brown butter upside-down pear cake. Vanilla whipped cream with that, of course, because it's a must for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And baguette and butter, because a French
Lovely.
Meal without bread and butter is not a French meal. So here we go. So go to luc2go.com. So it's Luc, L-U-C, to the number, and go, G-O, .com.
Luc2go.com. Yay!
I'm excited because...
You're getting a little late start,
I'm only a week away, but you know what? We only have so many boxes, and I think there are plenty of people like me who do things much later than rather earlier.
Mm-hmm. For
and,
sure.
And I think that we also have tons of sides available that you can add on to your order on the website. And wine suggestion, we have some – I recommended some fairly nice wine, four or five different wines. Of course, rosé bubble. You can get a bottle of rosé bubble for $20. It's a good
rosé bubbles are fun. They're very festive.
Exactly, and they're not. It's not like you're committing to a lot. You just, it's a nice. It's fun,
mm-hmm.
fun to add them. And then my wife's going to be doing flower arrangement to put on your table at the same time. Kathy from Flower Works is going to do flower arrangement to put on the table.
I love that. That's what I want to get.
Here we go.
Beautiful bouquet from Kathy. She makes the best ones. I was at Luc last week, and I commented because there was the most luscious bouquet in the women's bathroom, which brought so much joy to me.
And by the way,
you had your dinner served in the bathroom?
No, they didn't take that extra step, unfortunately. But I walked out, and I knew that it was Kathy because they were just gorgeous. And unfortunately, you just don't see that. And now we have 4 weeks without it.
You know what's more impressive? We have the same kind of arrangement in the men's room.
Wow.
Big arrangement.
Lovely.
I'm always loving
it. I love that.
And, of course, there's the huge one in the dining room,
generally. Of
yes.
Now that we are closed back down for indoor dining, nobody gets to see that.
You can look through the window now.
So I had our Cuoco box next week comes with Caesar salad, garlic focaccia, to go with your lasagna. Of course, our lasagna is a bolognese-based lasagna, so it comes with a
beef.
Little... Yep, it comes with a little base of good tomato sauce.
Right.
Fresh tomatoes are long gone. We'll have, of course, roasted Brussels sprouts and pine nut butter on the side, and a bright salad of small bucconcini, the small mozzarella balls.
So, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, a little mozzarella salad, so with peppers and white beans. So lots of stuff going on.
That's a lot.
In our dinner boxes. But I'm excited. I'm going to order one of these myself because, you know, Cuoco shut down right when everyone else did 8 months ago, and I haven't had a piece of Cuoco lasagna since. Like, I have a coconut cream pie every week, but I haven't had a piece of our lasagna.
That sounds delicious. I love a good lasagna. It's so delicious.
It's just, you know, Stuart. It was when Stuart from Spinace was the chef at Cuoco. He came up with this lasagna, and it's really a dynamite recipe. So
right.
We've been serving it ever since.
All right. We have Sam Spillman of Cafe Vita, who is here to help caffeinate us via phone.
Via phone.
He is coming up next, and we're excited to chat with him.
All right. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show on Cairo. Terry is spooning up our French toast for our breakfast as we speak. It looks so delicious, huh, Chef?
It looks absolutely wonderful.
It looks French, how dark we cooked it.
Yes.
Because I think as Americans, we tend to be scared to go that dark. It's just not in our nature. Everybody, when you're out there, I don't care if it's your pear tart, I don't care if it's your cookies, get a dark little crispy edge on the bottom.
Anything that has flour in it, don't be afraid to cook it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's talk to Sam Spillman from Cafe Vita. She's on the phone and going to tell us all about being your best inner barista. Hi, Sam.
Hi. How's everybody doing?
We are delicious. How are you doing?
Good. I love it. I love it. I'm doing great. So to get started, my name is Sam Spillman. I'm the director of coffee and cafe experience for Cafe Vita. And I'm also the 2019 U.S. Barista Champion. I started with Cafe Vita in May. And there's something you should know about Cafe Vita. So Cafe Vita has been around the Seattle area for over 20 years, really long time. But it just got bought out by Denning McLeese in January. And since then, it has been a whirlwind. There's been so many fun new projects, and I'm just stoked to be a part of the team. But we are very much focused on how we can create a coffee experience that really brings in, first, is serving high quality, and second is bringing in local businesses that we can collaborate with. That's so important to us. Our neighborhood, our community is like number one to us. And that's why I wanted to work for Cafe Vita. And more than that, work for Denning McLeese is because that is what gets me passionate, the community that surrounds coffee. So I'm going to talk through three topics today. I promise to keep it exciting. First one is U.S. Barista Championship. So last year I won the U.S. Barista Championship, and, let's just say I never thought I would. It's a pretty intense competition. You have four judges who are watching everything you do and tasting everything. You have two judges who are watching your technicals, so watching how you make the coffee. And you're scored, about half the score is how accurate you describe the flavors of each course and the taste experience and whether the judges experience that. So I feel like we have a little overlap in our passions here. And I feel like you'll understand this. But it's very, very technical on your sense of taste. So you're serving four espressos, four milk beverages, and four signature beverages. And presenting really kind of like a dance routine of what you think this industry needs and what the people of our industry need. After many years of competing, I finally won the championship last year. And I never thought I would. That was like my career goal. And once it happened, I was like, oh, shoot. What am I going to do next after this?
You are not retired.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, well, I'm only 27. It's a little too soon to retire. Maybe I should go into a different industry. Who knows at this point? And then about that time, I competed one more time after that. And then that's when Denny McLeese and Tom Buckley, who's the COO of Cafe Vita, they offered me a position. And it was doing everything that I could ever imagine of doing as the director of coffee and cafe experience.
So I'm going to stop you right there for one. I'm going to stop you right there for one second because we only have a limited amount of time. I wanted to make sure that as the queen barista, king, queen, whatever you are, there's a lot of people at home now that are stuck at home and using their espresso machines for the very first time that they maybe got for Christmas a couple years ago, or they went out and bought themselves one right now. What are some tricks that the home barista can use to make better coffee?
Ooh, I love this question. Okay, so first of all, invest in a good grinder, at-home grinder, because when you grind your coffee, whole bean, when you grind it, after 15 minutes, it loses so much of its flavor potential after grinding. So that's number one. The second thing is using good water. 99% of the coffee that you're drinking is actually water. So the quality of the water is really important. I just pull water from my Brita and that works perfectly. And the most important thing is using a good coffee. If you're not starting out with a good coffee, you're not really set up for success. Mm-hmm. I like right now we have our holiday blend in our Costa Rican. The Costa Rican, I got to help with the process all the way through from choosing the coffee to working with the roasters to roast it, and super excited about that coffee. So you can, if anybody out there wants to try a really good coffee, you should try that. You can go to the Vita website to get it. And same with our holiday blend. Holiday blend is going to go with, you were talking about browning sugar or brown sugar, and that's exactly what this holiday blend will go with, is those holiday treats.
You're sold in grocery stores also.
Yeah, so Met Market is fully stocked with all our coffees. Our Holiday Blend, our Costa Rican. You can get our Costa Rican on drip at their location. And then our online website has all the coffees that we offer. And be looking out, because in January we'll be launching our second single origin release. So that will be super fun. But, yeah, you can get those through our website. If you don't have a grinder, you can get them pre-ground. That's totally fine. I know grinders are an investment. Like, it does cost money. But how I see it is, with being quarantined right now, we're kind of stuck to brewing coffee at home. So the coffee that you would be spending, the money you would be spending on coffee, disinvest in a nice grinder. So you have coffee every morning.
I've been using the Bullet for the last 10 years now. I could grind my coffee every morning because I grind my coffee before I make it. Is that okay?
Yeah. Is the Bullet, is that the, like the little single blender thing?
Yeah. It's just like a coffee grinder, except the cup removes from the top.
You want to work towards a grinder that has burrs in it versus blades. Blades are not going to give you a consistent grind size. So if that's all you've been using, then you may not know the difference. But if you were to plug in a burr grinder, you would notice a significant difference in the flavor.
Okay.
Because when we talk about, that goes down to the science of it. Like coffee, it dissolves in three stages, sour, sweet, bitter. But if you have different grind sizes, like you have some grounds are bigger, some that are smaller, they're going to extract completely different.
Excellent.
I can't wait to buy one of those. I've been using my old Braun grinder for 40 years. I'm going to go buy a burr grinder.
Yeah, it will definitely change your life, and it will make that process so much easier for you. And then there's like a little less worrying about like, now I have to make coffee. It's going to taste bad. If you have the right tools to help you, then there's no worry in that.
Right.
I find it so, in this time of upheaval, I find it so comforting in the morning to get up and make my pour over, my drip coffee.
Yeah.
It's just as part of my routine that keeps me grounded, no pun intended. Sam, thank you for your time. I really appreciate
it.
Let's get on here again and talk about more ways to utilize your home espresso machine, because I just, so often I go into people's houses when I cater or this or that, and it's just sitting there looking like it's never been used.
For sure. Anytime you want to do this, I would love to share some tips at home. And thank you so much for your time and inviting me onto the show.
And you can learn more if you visit www.cafevita.com. And cafe is spelled with two Fs. So CAFFEVITA.com. Thank you so much, Sam. We look forward to talking with you soon.
Thanks, Madeline.
Awesome. Coming up next, we have Chef Bridget Charters and Catherine Curley are here with Community Loaves.
All right. That's the Cairo Radio 97.3 FM channel. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. And we're back. It's time for Bridget Charters to join us with Catherine Curley. We're going to talk about community loaves. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And what I really loved about this is one of the reasons we wanted to get Catherine on was that the idea that you have a purpose in life during this time when some of us feel purposeless. You're stuck at home. Nobody wants to go out, you know, blah, blah, blah. What can you do to kind of inspire yourself to be greater, to be bigger than the situation? And I think that Catherine Curley has figured out how to do that. Welcome to the show,
Welcome.
Catherine.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Tell us about community loaves.
Well, I think you hit on it. We all need a little purpose right now. We're stuck at home, and many of us are stuck at home baking. So this project really came out of an opportunity to do something with all of that baking, a little self-preservation because we can't eat it all. Mm-hmm. And what started out as a kernel of an idea and 19 loaves delivered to a local food pantry has now become 396 volunteer bakers.
Wow.
And drivers and packers, and we have now donated just about, what did it say, Bridget? Like
1,044 loaves this past Sunday.
Yeah, 1,044 loaves this
wow.
past Sunday. We've donated over 5 tons of bread.
Amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? 10,000
wow.
pounds of bread.
Yeah.
That's such a heartwarming thing.
It is a heartwarming thing, isn't it? It feels good.
I always think it's so endearing when you close your eyes and you picture that charming lady coming to your door, ringing your doorbell. You don't know who she is. She's your neighbor, and she brings you a basket with a loaf of bread with a little cloth on top, and you're like, I just had something baked.
Is that what you have visualized Catherine's doing?
Yeah.
Well, it is a lot like that, Thierry. When you think of it, we have 26 geographic hubs around the Puget Sound, as far south as Olympia, as far north as Everett.
Wow.
And folks are literally bringing their loaves, their community loaves. They have a specific formula in a brown paper bag with their name and leaving it on the stoop of the hub. And then from the hub, like a relay system, it gets marched forward to the food pantry.
Uh-huh. How beautiful.
And now, are you directing recipes at all, or are the people making what they want to learn how to make?
Well, it is. They are learning through this process, but it is a very specific formula in three versions. It's a sourdough-based formula. We have we call our now classic, what we started with. We also have a straight yeasted version, and we have a straight sourdough version. So we have three formulas, all the same ingredients, and it needs to be the same ingredients because the pantry needs the ingredient label
yeah.
on the loaves.
Super right. important.
Super important, yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
Right. And just to chime in, this all started as Northwest Bread Bakers on Facebook, and
uh-huh.
it was because Catherine wanted to learn more about bread. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And she started to tap into different bakers.
Yeah. Interesting.
I know that when we started on March 15, once the restaurants were closed, I started baking at home, and I mean, I even buy some flour from you.
You
got some
yeah,
flour. I didn't buy
flour.
It. You give it to me.
Because all the flour was sold out.
Yeah. I woke up, a month later because we're closing all the restaurants and everything. By the time I woke up and wanted to do bread, there was no flour left in the world. I was like, what's going on?
Right? Aren't we fortunate, though, to have two mills right up in the Skagit, both Fairhaven
right.
and Cairn Spring Mills, which is where we source all the flour that we support our bakers with.
Beautiful.
So how does that work? Do you have a grant to pay for that flour? Or,
no. The bakers
work?
Themselves, I mean, this is a donation
yeah.
by the baker. And every stretch of the way, it's a donation of their time and their heart, their talent, and their treasure. So they purchase the flour through the Community Loaves organization. We make it accessible at a very affordable price point. They can't beat at retail to help fuel our efforts.
Mm-hmm.
So how many bakers did you say you have through the Puget Sound?
We have 396 volunteer
wow.
bakers in our system. Yep.
Are you looking for more? Can people continue to volunteer or not?
Oh, absolutely. We're going to continue to grow, and we're going to have even more hubs. Driving over today, I was talking with a gal in Bainbridge who's just ready to get rolling, and we're going to continue to expand for sure.
You can imagine. I think HopeLink is your big distribution point, right, for people at home?
Yeah, we really appreciate HopeLink for a number of reasons. First, they have five pantries that they support through the one warehouse that is actually in my backyard. Mm-hmm. So we take all the loaves to that one warehouse, and then they can get distributed out to the various pantries that they support.
And I would never, I'm not trashing anybody, but you can imagine the difference between getting a loaf of Wonder Bread, say, which is perfectly fine. Again, I'm not trying to trash anybody, and getting a homemade loaf of bread for somebody who's hungry or is at food insecure or, you know, for their kids or whatever. It's going to be very different.
It's really different. And HopeLink has shared many really heartwarming stories of people who've come back and said, hey, is today a bread day? Do you have any more of that bread?
Right.
Also, our bakers, I can't say enough how surprised I am at how thrilled they are to be baking with these kinds of flours and making a loaf that they and their family enjoy. Mm-hmm. So it's nourishing their family and other families at
baking
the same time.
Baking with a purpose.
Yeah.
That's a lovely thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's nice. There's a. I was at some of the flower packing events. It's all out of Catherine's garage. She converted her garage. It's so funny. It's a 3-car garage that has no cars anymore.
Uh-huh.
It has an oven in it. It's got a baker's bench. It's got the bins for flour. Uh-huh. I mean, it's totally converted. And she brings these people on Sundays to start packing the flour into Ziploc bags. Mm-hmm. And they're all these older women, and they're so thrilled to be there, to get out of the house, be outside, have mm-hmm. a mask mm-hmm. on, interact. It's a hen fest. It's amazing.
Yeah.
They're so, and they're helping. And some of them are too kind of, I have some other friends that are a little too traumatized, so they just stay at home. But then the chatter on Facebook, on the Facebook page is awesome. I mean, it's so nice.
You know, I don't know. I mean, like, for example, we do Facebook Live here at our radio show. So people can look in as we tape and see the kind of the I don't want to say the backside of our show, we'll just say. But I do think for those people that are too traumatized or are very at risk, you know, sometimes older folks, sometimes people with underlying issues, it would be fun to have a camera in your operation on Sundays to let people kind of share in the festivities that it comes with. You know, distributing the flour and putting everything together.
Yeah.
That's a lovely idea. Maybe you guys can come join me. And
that'd be great. Yeah.
Bring your stuff.
Uh-huh. Well, I would be happy to, you know, Sean works for us, and I would be happy to have Sean on our time come over and show you how to set up a camera if you would be comfortable with that, Sean. Yeah.
Oh, that's
and
very
generous.
And just
kind of tell you what to buy. And you don't need much. I mean, you really don't need much.
It'd be great. I mean, and it's amazing because other communities, because of all of the publicity, and I'll let Catherine talk about it, but she was visited by a high-up media source.
High-up media source. Hopefully
and
not,
I'm like,
hopefully not the health department.
No. Media.
No, but let's talk a little bit about the health department for a quick second. You know, baked goods, those things that don't require refrigeration, is one of the few items that you can safely donate from a home kitchen. And it's actually approved by the Department of Health. You do not have to have a licensed kitchen. So if you're out there baking and you want something to do with all of your great work, mm-hmm. you should visit Community Loaves and check us out. And you can visit us through the Hot Stove Society website or the Hot Stove Kitchen.
Hot Stove Radio on Facebook.
Radio. Yeah. Sorry. Visit through the Hot Stove Radio.
Yeah.
So yeah. And, you know, for those people that aren't into bread, I mean, some people just don't like making it. It's a struggle for some. It's like pie dough. But if you are, you know, whatever your specialty is, there's numerous places to get rid of your product.
Right. Yeah.
I would suggest senior homes. You don't have to go in. You just simply drop it by. But baking for others is as much salve for the soul as it is baking for yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
yes.
And to chime in on that, I must say, I mean, Catherine has various stages because people are overwhelmed by the just the word sourdough, like, whoa, starter, all of, they just freak out.
You have to feed it every day.
Yeah, like, what? You know, so she's got different versions. She's got a easy peasy, dump and go, yeast, water, mix, proof, like, so simple. And, you know, it's very easy. And she's got a Poolish version, and then she's got the... And so people are now starting Nancy Leeson's one, who all of a sudden she's gone down the rabbit hole big time, you know, and it's amazing the transformation.
Do you do cookies too?
No cookies. It's Thanksgiving. You know, Thanksgiving is coming, and we're doing a special donation this Sunday, which is all dinner rolls.
Okay.
And so packages of eight. We're donating dinner rolls. I'm calling it free range. So our bakers are donating the rolls that they want to donate as long as they put a label on them. So, you know, we're going to have a little fun for the holidays.
Cool.
If anybody needs to donate, they can contact Catherine through Northwest Bread Bakers because they can always use funding. Yeah. Maybe we'll hit up the gates here quick.
Some people just are more comfortable putting out dollars than they are actually putting time in the kitchen.
And we really could use some help in that department because we want to expand, but it takes time and money. And the money, the little bit of money she makes is the little bit of profit from the bread flour she buys up in the Skagit.
Nice. Yeah. Which helps pay for everything else, right?
It does. It helps. It helps keep us fueled.
Yes, exactly. All right. Thank you so much for your good work, Catherine Curley of Community Loaves.
Thank you.
Up next, Bridget, you're going to stay, and Terry and I are going to
play with
rip you.
You
to shreds.
No way. No way. No way.
I'm just excited to see you, Bridget. I think it's fun.
Tasty trivia challenge on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's time for Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia. Once again, we have been hijacked, Chef Terry.
Yes. It seems like it started with one, now it's two.
Well, not only do we have two competitors, Catherine Curley has stayed from Community Loaves, and of course, Bridget Charters has stayed. She's one of our chef instructors here at the Hot Stove Virtual. If you ever want to take a class first, just go to hotstovevirtual.com, and you can sign up for one of her many classes. But apparently, the bread bakers are getting all bread questions, including, and I'm not a bread baker, so all my big talk before in the last segment.
What are we going to get, the geometry questions?
Anyway, it's Madeline's way of ruining my day.
Well, you announced it a little bit strongly that
it was going to be all bread questions.
I know, but you should know that Maddie is playing
she
on your
me.
Side, but on the other side.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Madeline, what do we got?
Girls against the boys.
Girls against boys, it's true. Well, today we are playing for listener Jonathan Harden. He is our tuning in live, and he submitted an awesome recipe for jewel cake. I think is what we're saying it. The Norwegian Christmas cake.
Yeah, exactly.
And so as a thank you, we will be playing for him today. He is going to receive a prize of crab cake mix and a signed copy of I Love Crab Cakes.
Lovely. Nice. This tasty trivia is brought to you by Rub With Love, my handcrafted versatile rub sauces and mustards that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. Look for Rub With Love products in your local grocery store or butcher shop or Bartell Drugs or online, and as long as you're stuck at home cooking, you might as well use some of my rubs and sauces. That's all I got to say. That's all I got to say about that. It's a way to help us get through the trying times of no indoor dining.
That is true. We have 15 total questions. Thierry will go first with his top five. And again, as Tom mentioned, these are all bread related. So is everybody ready?
Go right ahead.
All right. Thierry, your question number one. Unleavened breads are popular in many cultures. What is the Mexican version used in many different dishes?
Tacos. What am I trying to say?
You said tacos.
Yes.
You're wrong. It's tortillas.
Tortillas. That's what I'm always going to say. Oh, my God. I can't believe I don't even speak English anymore.
Tom, Spanish. Don't shoot him down yet. Let him answer the
cheating.
Question.
All right. Thierry.
He got it wrong. What do you mean?
Got it wrong. 0-1. Sourdough starter is made of flour and which ingredient?
Water.
That is correct. Sourdough starter is a leavening agent. You can make it by mixing flour and water. Leave it to ferment. Wild yeast in the flour and air will grow in the starter. Question 3. Why do you slit the top of a loaf immediately before placing it in the oven to bake?
So it can open up and so the air inside can actually escape.
I'll give that to you. It's to allow steam generated during baking to escape without blowing open the top of the loaf. Question four, to make basic yeast bread, which of the following ingredients is not necessary? Eggs, water,
eggs,
flour, or yeast?
Eggs.
Eggs is correct. A basic yeast bread needs only nothing more than four ingredients.
Extra points. What does bread does take eggs? Madeline?
I'm going to go say, a brioche?
Yes. Good
yes!
job.
I think that was one of our ones last week anyway. Okay, Thierry, you are 3 for 4. Your final question. What does an egg wash do to bread crust?
It forms a beautiful, beautiful little crust on top. You put it before you finish to bake. And by the time it's all baked up, it gives that golden brown color because the egg yolks and the salt, usually a little salt in there.
Sure.
And it
I'll
gives
give
that beautiful personality of crust.
Mm. Adds shine to enhance the appearance of your bread. So great. I will take it for you. There you go. You got 4 out of 5. Okay. Bridget and Catherine, are you guys ready?
We are ready. Catherine, you ready?
Ready.
What ingredient helps give pumpernickel bread its dark color?
Rye flour.
This says molasses.
Yeah.
Really?
Whoa, the bakers, 0 for 1 so far.
Stump the breaders, I like
we're
it.
We're going to say molasses.
Okay, question two. The outside of a loaf of bread is known as the crust. What term do bakers use for the soft part of the loaf inside?
Crumb.
That is correct, crumb. Question three. What ingredient can kill active dry yeast?
Many, many things. All right, do we get an option?
No, I think you should phone a friend here.
Go ahead.
Salt.
It doesn't
salt,
say salt.
Oil.
Hot water is what I
yes.
was looking
heat.
For.
Yeah.
Heat.
Heat. But I'll give those to you. Too. So you are 2 for 3. Cold water won't wake up the yeast.
Do we get
on
to
the
vote
other
on
hand,
whether they get this or not, or what's going on?
If it's too hot, the yeast will die. In order to activate yeast, you should use water that is about 110 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay, question four. Baking powder is made of baking soda and what?
Tartaric acid.
That is correct. The two ingredients don't react until moisture is added. In baked goods, baking powder is used as a leavening agent.
Here's one thing I would go back to, because I think 110 degrees often kills yeast. Because when you pull it at 110, it can and it sits in the hot pan, it might go even higher without you even realizing it, because you tempt it at 110. Pull it at 105, and then you won't have a problem.
There you go. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
Bread expert, Tom Douglas. Last question. What is the name of the Jewish unleavened flatbread that forms an integral part of the Jewish festival of Passover?
Lavash.
This is matzah.
That's Lavash is Norwegian.
Okay. He meant
but I'm sure matzah. There are Jews in Norway, too. So
that's true.
Can we go back to the egg wash question?
Absolutely. Oh, I know. Sorry. Okay, well, Thierry technically beat you two with, you only got 3 correct. Thierry got 4 correct, so let's see how Tom does.
Hey.
Are you ready, Tom?
I'm ready. And remember, the loser has to pay for the shipping of the
crab cake mix
and book.
For a crispier crust, what should you brush on bread dough?
Well, I think of crispier crust as going into the, after you form your loaf and you put it into the fridge so it dries out a little bit so that you get a crispier crust. I wouldn't brush anything on it personally. Some people like flour, but I don't brush anything
on
it.
I think egg wash and salt.
Water. Steam creates crispy crust. One method is to place a pan of water on the bottom shelf of your oven. The steam will rise as the bread bakes. However, it's much easier to brush the dough with water as well.
Yeah, but what really gets you that crust is sitting in an air. Go ahead. Catherine's got an idea here. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to suggest that the steam keeps the crust actually soft in the oven so that it can expand. And then it bakes firm. Mm-hmm. But the purpose of the steam wasn't really to make the crust crispy. The purpose of the steam was to allow that bread to actually stay soft. And
so you're calling Madeline a liar, and I like that.
Yeah.
I get it, Catherine.
I had a different...
So just
can't wait to have
disqualification,
you back on the show.
And I win.
No, it's water.
Well, I agree. This came from the World Wide Web, so okay. We will see what I think. I think we should lean towards the experts. So, Tom, I will give you that correct.
No. I would feel bad about that.
Okay, question two. What ring-shaped individual bread is first boiled and then baked?
Bagel.
That is correct. What tool will give your bread a crisp brown crust, just like wood-fired ovens?
Like a pizza stone type thing? Yeah.
Yeah, a baking stone. Baking
Although we made, Jackie, my wife, made 4 loaves of sourdough the other day in all 4 cast iron Dutch ovens that we have, that
Ooh,
we own.
Oh, yes.
And it was interesting to see the flatter ones and the bigger, wider ones and how the different, same exact weight on the loaves, everything came out a little bit different.
Which bread is a white yeast bread from Italy?
Focaccia.
I was going to say.
Ciabatta.
Ciabatta.
Italian word for ciabatta means slipper. This describes the flat oval shaped of sliced ciabatta bread, often eaten with olive oil or used in sandwiches. Okay, last question. If you are the main economic contributor in a household, what would you be called?
It's bread related. The major domo.
No.
No. The como loaf.
No.
The English muffin of, I don't know.
You don't sound like a bread winner.
Oh my God!
You are not a bread winner today.
That was an awesome question. I love that.
All right, Tom. Well, I believe that Thierry out of the thresholds has won this game. So you get to pick.
So the winner pays for the shipping, right?
Is
that
how?
No, whoa. What happened there? We just changed that. You guys need to. You have a tie.
I got 3 correct for Tom here. He refuses to get my charity questions right.
Remember, if you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook at Hot Stove Society Radio Show. You're listening to Hot Stove Radio on Cairo 97.3 FM. The show is produced by our team, Madeline Pennington and Amy Richardson. Sound and production by Sean McFadden. And our editor is Sean, don't call me Del Torre. If you miss any episode of Hot Stove Society Show, on Cairo, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening and happy Thanksgiving.
Yay.